You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hey guys, do you like heavy metal? Do you like video games, comic books, movies, theme parks, or even cool TV shows? We've got the place for you. Metal Geeks. Time to rock out with your geek out. Here are your hosts, Kerry the Metal Geek, Dave, and George. Geek it out, fellas.
Hey, welcome, my friend. You are tuned in to the Metal Geeks podcast. This is episode number 198. I am one of your hosts. I am Kerry the Metal Geek, along with...
Brutal Dave, here again.
Brutal Dave, what's up, man? And we also have back with us...
Justin, the metal detector.
I detected you were coming, sir. We are doing
Somebody's got to be here to say balls since George isn't.
That's right. We didn't start the episode with balls. You're slacking, man. Come on.
Well, you're supposed to add it to the little countdown clock.
Slacking. I didn't do that. That's on me. We're doing a very special live stream tonight. We have Rick Habib and Tom Anderer from the band Gray Skies Fallen. And you have 10 other bands too, right, guys?
Yeah, we have 17 other bands.
That's what I thought. We're going to get into all that stuff too, but thanks for coming on the show, guys. It's been a long time since you and me.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having us. Kerry, it has been a long time, and we've known each other, I believe, 22 years now.
Don't say that, man. It was 98, 99 at one of the Metal Fest.
99 is the first year that the Gray Skies played Milwaukee. So it was
there.
Or March, that March before Milwaukee in New Jersey. If you were at that first March Metal Meltdown,
yep.
It could have been there too, yeah.
I think, yeah, I was at all those shows, man.
So it's March of 99, yeah, man. Youngins. Man,
we're getting old.
Young men. Young so men, bad. We were. Virile young men.
Yeah. Gentlemen.
That's right. Now we're just old fucks.
Got that right, man.
Yeah, it's all right, though. That's all right.
We're getting there. But, we still try to do what we do.
So, Tom, you've been in Gray Skies Fallen since 2014 on the last album, correct?
Yeah. I joined in 2013. We linked up because Rick actually joined Buckshot Facelift the year before in 2012. And it's a funny story. Paulo Pagutulan was the guitar player. Shout out to Paulo. He was leaving the band, and we were looking for a new guitar player. And Sal, our drummer, who, funny enough, we shared for many years, but me and Rick didn't know each other. Mm-hmm. We didn't hang out. We didn't talk. We knew of each other, but not even really.
It's always the drummer, man.
We just knew. We knew that Sal played in this other band called Gray Skies Fallen. And we would joke on it and stuff like that. That's why it's so funny to me that all these years later, I meet Rick. He blows my mind with his musical abilities and his songwriting and his voice and everything. I fell in love with everything music wise, but also the man, also the guy. You know what I'm saying? We became very close, and to this day we're like best friends. It's great, man. I love the guy.
But, and I kind of the feelings are mutual. This is a love fest already.
This is very sweet.
Yeah, but tell you what, I kind of get pissed at Sal amongst other many, many things. As we know, the guy's been in my band for 23 years. And you hear the quivering in my voice just talking about Sal. Ooh, he's an interesting guy, but as we'll probably delve into. But anyway, I hold it against him because he deprived us of many years of possible collaboration before we met. He would always keep it secret. Oh, I'm in this other band. Hey, Sal, what's Buckshot Facelift? We don't talk about that. We don't talk. So it took Keith Moore, who was our engineer, recording guy, producer guy. And he was recording the Buckshot album, Elder's Rasp. And he said, listen to this album. This is the advanced mix. And they're looking for a guitar player. And at this time, 2012, things weren't too great with the Gray Skies. And, I was looking for something else to do for the first time. And I heard the album and I was like, oh, shit. All right, this is really, really good. And then I got in touch with Sal, and I was like, Sal, you're looking for a guitar player. I'll play guitar if you like. Music's really good. And then, like I said, I was kind of annoyed with him because he kept this all a secret. He didn't have to. He was afraid of, like, conflict or whatever. I don't know. Who knows?
Right.
But it didn't need to happen. And he finally met, and things are great.
He talked about how the two different bands were, like, different realities for him, and he didn't want the worlds to collide.
It's like having two women. It's like having,
exactly.
Having two women.
It really was like that. Yeah, it really, for Sal at least, which is hysterical because it didn't make any sense.
And so which one was the wife and which one was the side girlfriend?
I think Grace Guys was the wife.
Yeah, Buckshot was in his side piece because
Grace Guys was first.
Yeah, he was in other bands before Buckshot, like other side bands. That he would always keep secret, and he would go away for a weekend with this band. And he'd go, I'm playing in Albany, or I'm playing in this and that. Oh, yeah, I'm supposed to practice and shit. And then Buckshot comes around like 2000, what, Tom? 4, 5 or something like that?
Yeah.
Well, so from 2005 to 2012.
Yeah, Sal, 2005.
Yeah, so 7 years there where we didn't even know each other.
Well, I'm glad you guys finally found each other and now are bandmates.
Yeah, it was really good because I was kind of ready to hang things up, perhaps at the time. You know, so it was kind of a saving thing.
Let's talk about the last Grace Guys album, Cold Dead Land. Phenomenal album. I listened to it again today.
Oh, awesome!
I know it's coming out. It's being re-released tomorrow, as the week that we're recording this. Basically, let's talk about the original release of it and then why it's being re-released now.
Sure. That album, to us, it's still the new album, you know, but it's been a few years since we recorded it now. But and that was after we went from a 5-piece band, which we always were, in different lineups over the years. It's always been 5 pieces, except for one EP that we were a 3-piece. The bass player from Helmet played on there, and Afterbirth, he played on there. Dave Case, shout out to Dave Case, by the way, that guy's the shit. Anyway, we're a 3-piece now with Tom, myself, and Sal, and we wrote these songs, and we demoed them in Tom's basement and honed them with home recording. I overdubbed guitars and stuff like that. And by the time we went to the studio, things sounded great. We recorded. And Dan Swano mixed and mastered, and this was the first time we had worked with him, and I'd always wanted to work with Dan, and I think it sounds awesome. So we put it out ourselves in January of last year, right before the world stopped, you know, January of last year. And it's for having zero, you know, push behind it or any promotion of any kind. It's for us, it's done all right. It's caught some eyes and stuff. And somebody wants to re-release it, and it's coming out tomorrow on CD again. And it's also coming out on cassette in a couple of weeks as well.
Where's that sweet vinyl?
Oh man, Carrie, you're trying to send me into a depression right now.
Does he know?
I don't know. Probably not. I haven't really, you know. So we were approached by a label right before the record came out, and he's like, "We're gonna put it out. We'd like to put this out on vinyl if you don't have anybody to do that." And I said, "Oh, of course, man. Sure." It was a reputable label, for what I thought anyway. And it fell through after, like, we got Travis Smith to do our artwork for the label.
Understandably, with after the world fell apart.
It did, but, out of nowhere, it's like, you know, we're not doing it. So that kind of got dropped out of nowhere. So it was like a gut punch, you know?
Yeah, it sucks.
Because we had the art done, and it was Swano did a vinyl master. It was great, man. We were so psyched for that. And then I wake up one morning, check my email. It just says canceled. Boom. You know, like, we're not doing this anymore. Thanks, buddy. You know, continue to put out a million other records, but
hopefully there's another opportunity.
And we'll see one day. One day, maybe it'll come out on vinyl.
Yeah, we'll keep our fingers crossed.
Yeah. I know, Rick, you're a vinyl collector, aren't you? like me.
Well, Tom, you know, my history with vinyl, real quick, and I'll meet the drone. I had a ton of
This is the place to drone, dude.
I had tons of amazing 80s metal vinyl that I would go to Zigzag Records in Staten Island in the early 90s. And Zigzags was a legendary store in Brooklyn. And they, you know, look it up. You'll see Iron Maiden, 1982, sitting in there with Paul Di'Anno, you know, doing an in-store set, you know, sign, you know, legendary store. So they had a Staten Island-based store. And I would stock up on vinyl for $2 a pop. you know, this is, and I would put together, and I had a good 100 records of, you know, today these things are worth so much money. Anyway, they were destroyed in a Hurricane Sandy.
Oh,
so after that,
sorry, dude.
Yeah, it's you know, I lost a lot in that flood, so that sucked. You know,
we're just gonna keep opening up old wounds.
Yeah, just pour
it on, man. Pour it on. It's better than making new wounds. That's what, like, I said.
Turbo Express. Remember the Turbo Express? The Turbo. I saw that floating away, and man, that shit's worth like $500 now, you know,
yeah,
or more. And the you know, a lot of shit. Sega power base converter for the Genesis. That was floating away. A lot of cool things. But all my records, you know, I had the first Bathory, so that's worth a lot. You know, I had the first three Batheries and first prints. You know, first one. Yeah. Black marks, so that's crazy shit, man. So that sucked, and then, you know, it kind of put me off to vinyl for a little while. I didn't want to start all over, so I started all over eventually, and then you know, little by little, it's accumulated over the last 5 years. And but Tom is the, you know, the big time vinyl collector. He's,
are you, Tom? You know,
collection dwarfs mine. So yeah,
you agree with that? Yeah,
I mean, yeah, I hate to like talk about it because I know obviously it's a, you know, it's a sour spot for Rick.
Ah, bro, come on. But my collection's pretty nice now these days.
But yeah, no, it's I don't know, man. I got whatever. What do you think? 200 records or something? I don't know. It's not that crazy.
I got close to 100. You got like 4 or 5 times what I got. So
yeah.
The problem with collecting vinyl now is they're so damn expensive now.
It is,
even everything.
You got to pick a double album, right? A double album on social media is $50.
Yeah,
it's not. I don't know, man.
It's hard. I pre-ordered the new Halloween album coming out. I pre-ordered like this limited edition hologram version that
play at
the hologram show. Wow. Like, that looks cool, but it's like. It's like $35, you know. It's like, damn,
that's before shipping.
Yeah,
before shipping, exactly.
Yeah, they were.
See, I'm waiting on mine.
You still haven't gotten yours yet.
I haven't got mine from Amazon. I actually reached out to them the other day, and they're like, "Yeah, it's stuck in some warehouse. We'll give you a $5 credit." I'm like, "Nah, I won my album.
It's on the Evergreen ship."
Yeah, maybe it might be where it was.
So yeah, this is already going for a lot on Discogs. That's the thing with vinyl, man. You can't even buy it to enjoy. Well, you can't. I buy it to enjoy it. Yeah. I don't care how much they're worth, but it's fascinating to see. You know, for example, this album here is the my album of 2020, which I've been hyping to everybody. Hoover Kumru, or however the hell you pronounce it. There's all these bands that you can't pronounce their names anymore. You ever notice that? There's a lot of this going on. A lot of that going on, in my opinion. So this is the album of the year here. Going for like $100 or more, $125. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And everyone should check this record out here.
How do you spell the name of the band?
Havru, you know, Havru, something to that effect. If you search for that, you'll
find it.
Yeah, I'm sorry, man.
Like Finnish?
Yeah. Amazing. If you listen to that album, I guarantee you're going to say it's amazing.
Okay. If it's good, it's got to be Finnish.
Oh, man, it's so good.
Well, I haven't heard this one, so I'm adding it to my playlist.
I try to hype that album up to everybody. I also try to hype this up to everybody as well.
Oh, my God.
I did find that.
You know, I posted in the Metal Geek Society that somebody is selling one of those on eBay. And actually, somebody reached out to me this week. He collects old fanzines. He's like, you know what, man? I don't have issue 5. Can I buy them from you? I'll just give you some. Just pay for the shipping and There you go.
Yeah, man, it's like a little time capsule, right?
Yeah, man. That the cover was done by this guy Mike Swearingen, and he went by Jesus Crotch back in the day. But there was a band, Infernal Dominion, if you remember them from Houston. Mm. He was a singer for them. And
Okay, cool.
Take a real quick little side note, but a good friend of ours from the Houston metal scene played guitar in Infernal Dominion. He was in Blast Fury and Imprecation. Wes Weaver passed away last week. He was the guy that, if you were from Houston, he, like, back in the early, you know, mid-80s to 90s, him and Bill Bates, who was my mentor, actually, were the guys who did the very first radio station that played metal. So I used to stay up late, pop a cassette in there and record it, and then listen to it on the way to school the next day, where I first heard, like, Obituary and Entombed and all that stuff, all these underground bands I would never have heard of before. So, yeah.
Sorry to hear, man.
Rest in peace, man. He's it sucks, man. He lived like the next neighborhood over from me, truthfully. And we always talked about, man, let's get together, we're gonna hang out, and then the fucking pandemic shit hit, you know?
Fuck.
You never know, man.
Yeah. A lot of good people seem to be leaving us lately, you know? It's crazy.
Yeah.
It is crazy.
Let's talk about something not so fucking negative, like losing people and records.
Records were thousands floating away in filth water.
When you said that turbo, the Turbo Express duo, I'm like, oh man, I know what that is.
Oh yeah, that was the best Christmas of my life, man. 1990, I got the Turbo Express, and I got the Turbo Graphics 16. I got the Turbo Graphics 16 with CD-ROM drive and this case that came with it. It was all in one. It was crazy. And that's worth, you know, a lot too. I don't have that anymore either. So,
yeah. I had a buddy of mine down the street.
I had to look up what this was. I've never heard of this before.
I used to play at Toys R Us all the time.
My buddy down the street actually had it. I never had that one. I had the Turbo Graphics regular, but he had the whole shit like you did, like the CD-ROM and then everything. Yeah. Man, there were some great games on that system.
There were. I got the Mini now, the Turbo Graphics Mini. I got that.
How is that, man?
It's awesome, dude. I mean, I think it has like 30 games on here.
Nice.
Yeah, this shit is great.
Nice.
I want to know what's going on behind Rick. I see his cat, like, eyeballing whatever's in the air.
That's a newt tank with newts in there. It's a terrarium.
That's cool.
I have two of them. That's a terrarium with one species, and then in the other room I got an aquarium set up with aquatic newts.
Well, your cat is very interested in it.
Yeah, he's fascinated in them. Yeah,
so
he's going to get his shots tomorrow. This guy, he's getting
good luck.
He's a new
the vaccine,
the COVID vaccine.
Yeah,
he's lined up.
Let's go back to the Cold Dead Land album a little bit more. So. It's coming out on Grim Distribution, so if you're looking to pick it up, you can actually go to that website right there, pick up the album, and you guys have a lot of different bands, and you're all on Bandcamp, so let's do it this way. Just go to bandname.bandcamp.com. Let's fill in that first name. Tell us all the bands that you guys are in and what you're promoting.
Well, together, we're in four projects. Gray Skies Fallen is currently... recording. We're writing for an upcoming EP. We're also going to push the re-release of the album, which we feel is our strongest album. You know, so we'd love to have. They're pressing 1,000 copies, so to us that's great. So let's get 1,000 people to buy. You know, to get that CD, that'll be great. And that's greatskiesfallen.bandcamp.com. Buckshot Facelift is the grind death metal crazy shit stuff that we do with Ulcer Island being on the last full-length album. You should check that out. It's buckshotfacelift.bandcamp.com. And then we have this new project we're in together called Reeking Aura. And this is a tape that we put out. This band here is myself and Tony. This is basically Buckshot Facelift without Sal. We said, Sal, go over there for a few minutes. We got to do something else. So we have Keith from the band Afterbirth, who put out, as you see behind Tom and myself, we have this album here. sickest album, this record. This band is sick. He's playing drums, and Will from Buckshot on vocals, and we have Ryan Lipinski from Unearthly Trance, among other bands, playing guitar. So we have three guitar players on this band. It's myself, Ryan, and Terrell Grunham, who's, since I'm showing off records, I mean, his band here, Thetis, as you see from my shirt here, this is another sick album. I mean, in our little circle that we have here of friends, these are heavy hitters, these albums here. I would advise everybody to listen to this album here, this new Thetis album. It's on Maggot Stomp Records. It's fucking mind-blowing.
Nice. I haven't heard it yet, man.
Yeah, I would advise everybody to check that out immediately.
So what we can do, I'll get with you, Rick, all the stuff you've mentioned, all the bands, all the stuff that you like the Thetis. We'll put that all in the show notes on our website at metalgeeks.net. People can go to the link straight from there too if they're looking for it.
I advise everyone, like I said, man. I know Tom would as well.
Absolutely, yeah. We also have a two piece that's just me and Rick called Brave the Waters, and Brave the Waters is a little bit more laid back. I'm playing. I basically write songs acoustically, and Rick just improvises in the studio. He plays electric and he improvises over my written acoustic.
Yeah, so that's how that band works. We get really, we go on a different plane and then certain ways, And then we put out vinyl like this, this beautiful purple vinyl, which you can't even see, but it's dark purple. So everybody should check out Brave the Waters. Yeah, it's a nice deep purple here. Deep purple, yeah.
There you go.
That's interesting. I'm interested to check that one out. Probably 80% of the time when I sit down just to like play guitar, I'm just doing that. I'm just like put on a backing track and just like mellow out and improv. I love that stuff.
This is very ambient. There's a pedal by Strymon. Are you familiar with Strymon pedals? There's a pedal called the Big Sky pedal. It's a reverb. It's, amazing reverb pedal. That's featured on this band a lot. It's very, watery and just, trippy shit, man. I think everybody should check that out too. You might think if you want to just chill in your bed and smoke a little enjoyment and relax. That's the project.
That legal. You know, legal activity.
Legal in many states.
It's legal. It's a legal activity.
In New York.
And these are all on Bandcamp, so people can go check them out and order straight from there too.
Yeah, vinyl's cheap, sure. $15. That's how you should price vinyl, right?
$15, little man. Put that shit.
I hope it's $15. I haven't looked at the price in a while. I hope it ain't more. I think it's 15.
Yeah. So, let's go back to the Cold Dead Land. It was one of my favorite albums of last year, not just because I'm blowing smoke up your guys' butts, because I know you guys, but it really is a great album.
I agree with you. Thank you. Thank you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm glad
you
agree. I hold our work in high esteem.
Yeah.
It's our favorite. It's our favorite. My favorite Grace Guys album.
Yeah, mine too.
Mine too. So thank you for saying that, Harry. I appreciate it.
So when you were going in to write this album, do you look at other outside influences of, okay, we want to sort of bring this into this album, we want it to sound like this, or do you use film, movies, or anything, other things to actually influence it?
I think there's been a few times that Rick, you've said to me, like, I want like a Def Leppard vibe here.
Oh yeah, Cold Dead Lands was written under that umbrella of Def Leppard.
There was a little bit of that, yeah, and even though
it sounds nothing like it, it has that like aura somehow. You know what I mean? That we try to channel.
It was a very interesting album to write. It was very like sporadic, and a lot of riffs just came just from us like just jamming in my basement, and it was just great, man. It was like a good time. You know, like when I think back of the writing and the those times of shaping the record, and then
that's how I write. Yeah.
Then the production with Keith, and then obviously Dan Suano. It's like it's a home run. If we really feel like it came out great.
I mean, Dan Swanö was a fucking living legend. Really,
yeah.
Is.
What an honor, huh?
Really, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
And I've been talking to Dan for 23 years online. You know, about hey, can you mix our album? I was talking to him when we did our first album about mixing our first album. This was 98. It was recorded. So 1998. So it was a long time coming, and finally we were able to pull the trigger. You know, we love working with Keith. So we wanted to keep the sounds. Keith gets our great sounds on tape, on digital, and then you know now Swano's mixing and mastering our stuff for us.
That's amazing. Tell me about the cover a little bit too.
Well, that's a Travis Smith special, of course.
Oh yeah.
Travis, he also did the Brave the Waters covers that I was holding up. He's done our Buckshot cover. He did the last few Buckshot facelift covers on Ulcer Island. He's done our digital cover, which was Buck at the Moon, the EP for that, which is a really cool cover. So Travis is the man. Obviously, everybody that's into metal has probably owns multiple records with his artwork on it.
Yeah, if you don't know who Travis Smith is, you know who Travis Smith is.
That's right.
Yeah, right.
If you've ever looked at an album from like 98 on, you've seen Travis Smith.
Yeah. Like the greatest records ever. Blackwater Park, you know, all those Opeth albums, all the Catatonia albums. You know, he's done some great shit.
Sound of Perseverance, right? He did that one too,
oh,
right?
Hell yeah.
November's Doom, a bunch of other albums.
Covered. Right. And after the Death album, he did Control Denied.
Yeah.
Oh, he did that one too?
Oh, I realize that. God. I love that.
I hope so.
I would just buy artwork from him and just hang it up. I don't have any room left in my house, but
Carrie has no room on his walls.
Look who's talking.
Yeah, I don't have much.
But I mean, I would just love to have a room devoted to his his artwork, you know.
You know what's funny? I'm the artist, and I have tons of blank wall space in my house. There's like one. It's my bedroom is like the only room in the house that we have artwork hung up. Everything else is like blank.
Yeah, this room here I'm in is like my jam room and where I play games and where I work now. I've been working in this room for the last year. So this is the only room that has my, you know, teenager, like heavy metal shit hanging on the walls and stuff like that. So that's where my wife lets me get away with this little room here. So, yeah, I want to get all the Travis covers that he's done for us. On the, you ever see those canvas? They print like a canvas of your photo, yeah. Like, you know, 24 by 20, you know, whatever, 18 by 18. I want to get him to do it.
Yeah.
All the covers he's done for us and put them in this room over here, like going around the room. Because he's done like 12 covers for us now over the years.
You can get a quilt done with all those covers.
Yeah, could be fun.
We have plenty of business.
Old age, getting old. Yeah.
So yeah, one of the reasons we wanted to bring you on the show was definitely talk about the bands and metal and stuff like that. So what are you guys into right now? What's actually like... We call it is tickling our geek. What is tickling your geek for music right now?
Well, recently I've been listening to Brutality. So Brutality from Florida. It's Screams of Anguish, 93 or 94.
Yeah.
I never knew them. I never discovered them until like a couple weeks ago. And they blew my mind. I can't believe that they have more records for me to dive down.
Isn't that the best feeling, man? When you like discover somebody and you're like, there's like eight more albums to check out. Yeah.
It's so good. It's so good. I highly recommend it. It's really good. It's got like, it's super, super brutal death metal, but there's like integrity leads and he hangs on the note. And then does the twirls and stuff. It's great, man. And it's tasteful. There's a lot of personality. I fell in love with this record for sure.
And let's see, lately I got this 7-inch here, Kyrios.
Oh.
Yeah. this is an unknown bunch of gentlemen who we don't know who they are. It's very mysterious.
Oh, okay.
But this is a great little 7-inch debut release, 3 songs. One of them is a interlude, but this is great black metal. Sick. This is sick. I got the tape too.
Nice.
This is pretty awesome. And I've listened to that. Listen to the new False Gods
album. Yeah.
These are also
love those guys.
Gentlemen that we love.
Great guys.
Well, personally, yeah. And this is a great album. No Symmetry, Only Delusion. This album here on Seeing Red Records. Fucking heavy and great. We play a lot of shows with these dudes. So, like, when the things start picking up again. Yeah, all the bands we mentioned tonight that you will all check out and admire and listen to and say that, wow, this shit is good. We're all probably going to be playing together eventually. So
all these bands are great. To
come out and see us one day.
Hopefully. They're all filled with gentlemen. They're all
It's been a fucked up past year for everybody. So I know I'm sure you guys are fucking itching to get back out there and play some shows. But what have you been doing in this past year besides working from home like everybody else? But
well, music wise, real quick, we put most everything on hold for the last year, you know, with all the projects kind of, I'm not a home writer. I don't write at home. Like Tom said, the riffs came out when we were jamming. That's how I write personally.
Yeah.
So sitting home with the guitar, trying to come up with riffs, that's really not how I do things. I try to explain that to everybody. I hope they forgive me for the light, you know, but once we start jamming, which we've been doing, it comes naturally. So Reeking Aura is recording currently, and we're doing recording 2 brand new songs. We're going to see what happens with those songs, but really sick.
That's we're really excited about the way it's coming out. Yeah.
Yeah. And Brave the Waters, hopefully we'll record in the spring, early summer, and around the same time as Grace Guys. We're all going to be recording, all 3 of those. And Buckshot, we're going to hopefully kick into gear a little bit later this year. So that's the music thing going on. Yeah.
That's amazing, man. That's a lot of work.
Yes, but luckily these are smaller chunks here. Like the Reeking Aura is the 2 songs. We have more songs in the bank, but we want to get out quick. You know, after the pandemic, we want to get some out. I think.
Yeah.
You know, in quick fashion, just to keep people. You know, it's been like you said, it's been a crazy year. Here's a little taste of something that maybe we were able to do during that time.
And we're hopefully we're coming towards the beginning of something or the end of something. Either one, there's some kind of hope out there. You know what I mean?
I think so. I hope so. You know, I realistically shows and stuff, indoor shows at the great places that we play in New York, like St. Vitus Bar. I don't see that happening. You know, I don't know. I mean, who am I?
We're maybe later in the year. Man. We're social creatures. We need to get together.
And I think a lot of people during this pandemic have really started to appreciate artists and musicians and missing all these things that you would sort of take for granted, like local shows and all that kind of stuff. I think once things start opening up and it's safe to actually have, here's a show at a club again, you're going to see a bigger turnout for a lot of this stuff. I'm hoping, you know.
Agreed.
So I can tell you, I just did a weekend at a big public event that, and it was packed and people were excited. They were excited and they were spending money and I had a good time.
Nice.
They've had a whole year to save up. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
I had a bunch of people come and be like, hey, I got to buy extra because I didn't get to buy from you last year. So now I got to buy double. You know, we heard that a lot. So,
awesome.
It was cool. People were excited. So you're right. Once the stuff starts opening back up, it's going to be crazy for a while.
Yeah. You're going to see a lot of bigger bands finally being able to tour again. Bands that we like, and I'm not saying bigger bands, but you know, like Metallica and shit like that. But all the shows that were canceled in the past year and a half, and then a lot of the local stuff, man, everybody's fucking dying to get back out there and get on stage, you know?
Well, Grace Guys Fallen, we were supposed to play with Swallow the Sun right before this, during that. That was a good show. We had another show with Evoking Funeral Masters. We had
in Chicago,
show
right?
They're from New York, New Jersey.
Oh, they are.
And we've shout out to Evoking and John and Chris Molinari. I've known John since I was 5 years old. John is the guitarist and singer from Evoking. Five, 4 years old, I've known him. So
I saw them back at one of those metal, the Milwaukee, New Jersey Metal Fest back in the day. Yeah.
They have a presence about them live when they play live. You know who you're watching, and that shit is a good experience to watch.
So we talked about those.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be great, man. So we're going to get all your bands on in one bill. So you're just going to fucking work like a bunch one night, man.
That's an exhaust.
We've done double duty. We've done some double duty shows. Gray Skies and Buckshot did double duty with Artificial Brain, who everybody needs to, check out. Amazing. All friends of ours. Will from Reeking Aura, from Buckshot. That's his other
band. Artificial Brain, sure. Gia.
Artificial Brain. And, those dudes
Brain
are
boys.
Sick. And
Milk Boys.
I thought it was going, but
Milk Crew.
Yeah. Another sick one.
Milk Boys.
Dan from Artificial Brain, Dan Gargiulo, formerly of Revocation, he plays the ending solo on Cold Dead Lands, the last song, fading out the, which I love the way the record ends. And that's Dan from, Revocation and Artificial Brain.
I was very lucky. I got to tour with them in 2018.
That's cool.
I did the Demolich Blood Incantation tour, and I got to play bass in Artificial Brain. It blew my mind. It made me a better bass player because I'm a guitar player that was basically forced into playing bass. Because I'm not good enough as a guitar player to play death metal. I play guitar in another band that's more like Long Island hard post hardcore emo, whatever you want to call it, kind of in the vein of like Inside, Clockwise, Silent Majority, that kind of thing, that kind of vibe. Really melodic. But not whiny, not like not emo, like whiny
mall metal,
right? It's not Hot Topic. It's more of like very very heavy. I'm tuned down. I'm tuned down to drop C sharp. And it's heavy. But the singer is singing, and he has like a Robert Smith vibe. Kind of thing. There's a little bit of like a Smiths vibe, a little bit of like a Cure vibe. But then also throwing a little Ian McKay, there's a little bit of like a, he yells it a little bit, here and there, and it's got groove to it and shit. It's very groove oriented. And I was going to say before, it's crazy because I've been chomping at the bit because not only is this band, this other band that I'm speaking of is called Always Greener, if you want to check it out. So alwaysgreenerny.bandcamp.com. It's Always Greener NY, I believe.
And it's in the list.
But yeah, that band has never played a show as a full band. And Reeking Aura has never played a show. And Reeking Aura put out a fucking tape. It's crazy. We snuck in and recorded with Colin.
Colin Marston.
It was February 29th. I remember it was the Lunar Year shit. So we were there. Yeah. It was like 28th, 29th, and like the 1st of 2020. So it was right before the world fell to shit. It was like 2 weeks before.
In Ground Zero in Queens, where that shit went down, and there was corpse trucks.
Like, we were talking about like, yo, we're gonna play some sick shows. We were psyched, man. We were so psyched on that band. We obviously you guys know the story. Everybody's got the same story.
What was the last show that you guys saw?
The last show that I went to was Blood Incantation.
Blood Incantation show. So this is a crazy story. So check it out. I toured with Blood Incantation. I'm very, very lucky to say that those guys are my boys. I fell in love with those guys.
Yeah.
And we have,
album of the year, 2019.
Artificial Brain dudes, Blood Incantation dudes, and the dudes from Demolich, all of us. We bonded. We had such a great time. Shout out to all you guys. I love you guys. If any of you guys are watching, So anytime those dudes come around, I'm going. I want those guys to come back to chill with me at my house. You know what I'm saying? Like after the show and shit. They're just so busy. It hasn't happened yet. But, you know, anyway.
That would be awesome, dude. But anyway,
when those dudes come back around, I'm coming out. I want to see them. They're my friends, you know? And I go there with Rick. And Rick's my friend. Rick's my, you know, close friend. So I'm psyched to have Rick meet them and hang out and shit. And we're all going to fucking hang out, have a good time. They're going to play a six set, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So St. Vitus, the venue they're at, there's the band's hanging out in the basement. And literally, I played the venue with these guys last, you know, whatever, a couple of years before. We played two shows at Vitus on that tour on the same day. It was crazy. And so I go down to the basement with Rick where, you know, I see them, we're hanging out. They go up to play. Let me back up. Artificial Brain opened the show.
Mm. Awesome.
And here's the kicker.
So good, man.
Yeah. Artificial Brain opened the show. They were amazing. But unfortunately, me and Rick are right in the front because, of course, we have to be right up front. And there's some guy has something to prove, and he hurt Rick. Is the short end of it?
No shit.
Yeah, he slammed to interrupt real quick. Like, he slammed into my spine, and I had it's my fault. I shouldn't be up close in a death metal show at age 43 anymore, especially after I had spinal fusion 2 years ago. So I had discs removed, and I had my spine fused, and he shot me in the back, and it was devastating, and And Blood Incantation, man, I wanted to see them. And they were playing both records. They were playing Stars Fallen and Hidden History of the Human Race, back to back, straight through. Also, Dysrhythmia played that show. I mean, this is a fucking show, man.
That's right.
This is a legendary show. And I couldn't see it because I took a shot to the back from some guy who I didn't even see, crowd killing. And if I would have seen him coming, I would have been probably on charges because that dude would have been on the ground in a heap, you want to hit somebody in the back, you do whatever. But that was the last show.
I missed that Demi Lich is like in operation again. I didn't realize that.
Yeah,
they're
a couple years ago. Yeah.
I think it was a couple years ago. Didn't they play MDF? And then
I think so.
And then they decided because the show, the response I think was so great or whatever, they got psyched.
That's some wild stuff, man. They play some crazy music.
It's ridiculous, man. Like, Will Smith. Shout out to Will, my homie.
Big Will.
He turned me on to them years ago, and I never, to be 100%, I never like fell head over heels in love with them like Will did. And the fact that I got to but I still fell in love with them. I still love them. But I wasn't obsessed, Will was like obsessed. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
like
he
literally played him Biolich. Like Biolich was him and the whole concept. Yeah, the whole concept was like to be a Demolich, tribute but obvious influence kind of,
right?
You know what I'm saying? Like
how Gruesome is like Death Worship, like that kind of thing. Like
those dudes love Demolich and rightfully so. You know what I'm saying? But to get the call. And be like, yo, and a crazy story too, man. He called me and he was like, yo, we want, we're looking for someone to play bass because Sam's got school for this tour. Check out the tour. It's Demolich and Blood Incantation. And literally me and him were talking about Blood Incantation just like a couple months prior, like three months prior or something like that. And I was saying about like, they're the only like new band that I like. That I was that I kind of connected with or whatever. I got the tape of Starspawn. And I was like, yo, I actually really like that band. But whatever. So he tells me the tour is those two bands and then Artificial Brain. And I'm like, I honestly, I instantly thought I can't play those songs. Like, I'm just like, yo, I don't know, man.
Like the imposter syndrome. It's real
hard. Like, I don't know if I could do it. I just don't know if I could do it. But also too, just because of time and everything like that. And I told him no.
Oh.
And I hung up the phone.
Oofa.
and I called him back. I called him back like, you know, whatever, 15 minutes later, something like that. And I was like, yo, you know what? I'm a stupid idiot. I can do it. I can totally do it. I grabbed my balls and I said I could do it. You know what I mean?
Good for you.
And he was just like, he was like, yo, we already asked somebody else, but like, I'll put the stop on it if you 100%. And I was like, yo, I'm 100%. He was like, all right, I'll put the stop to it.
Very cool.
So yeah, I got in by the skin of my teeth.
Yeah, blood ink.
You psyched yourself out, man. You psyched yourself out.
Absolutely, man. 100%.
I'd have done the same thing, so you know.
Yeah, but then I just I listened to the songs. I was like, give me the set list like as soon as fucking possible. I listened to the songs every day, like on my commute and shit. So I listened to the set probably at least like 4 times every day, which is a lot for death metal. And fucking then went home and practiced it every night. I was like, if I do it every night, because after a certain, like after like a week or two, like, you know, the songs, you get the songs in and out. It's more of a endurance thing. It's like a,
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like, can you do a whole set like this?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I get it. Like, yeah.
It's more endurance. It's more about just building up the muscles, mm-hmm. I guess, or whatever, you know? And, it was crazy, man, because Keith showed up like 2 days before the tour, the drummer. I think he was overseas or something like that. He showed up two days before the tour. We got in 2 practices. One was like super rushed and wasn't, you know what I mean? But like, basically we practiced twice and then went and toured.
That's crazy.
And I also say another crazy story about that tour. Those guys are so talented. Check this out. We played like 4 shows, 5 shows. It was like two and a half weeks. Like, yeah, it was like 2.5 week tour. We played like 4 or 5 shows. We were in Atlanta, I think. And Johnny Boy, shout out to Johnny Boy. He heard that one of his close friends passed away. So he left just to like, kind of, you know, he bounced, he went home to be there.
Yeah.
And Dan met up from Australia because he was touring with Revocation in Australia. He showed up and those dudes swapped and it was like nothing. And Oleg just switched parts. Oleg
is already the third guy
in the hotel room. Just that. They played. He was like, okay. He was playing Dan's parts, and then he was playing John's parts.
Wow.
Like the dude that dude Oleg is so talented. All those dudes are so talented.
Yeah, man.
It's ridiculous. All those guys. Dan, Keith. Shout out to all those guys. And then to put the cherry on top, when I came home, I played one more show with them, but it was with Sam. The bass player was playing Dan. It's guitar parts and John was the other guitar player. So I actually have been on stage with all members of Artificial Brain somehow.
Except Paulo. Or was Paulo around for any of those
except
shows?
Except Paulo.
Paulo, formerly of Capremesis.
That's right. Capremesis and, oh man. So many good bands. What the hell is his new band called? His new band is an amazing band.
I forget, man. I gotta be honest.
Oh fuck! Now I put it on the spot. it's a bad. It's a name that you just can't pronounce. Like, fuck.
So a lot of the bands you're talking about, the scene in the New York area. Tell me about that. How is it right now? Is it, you know, surviving the pandemic, and what's the scene like up there? I know there's different styles of music, of course, but.
So our little inner circle, a lot of, you know, bands that I mentioned tonight, old friends,
Hold up, Rick. Your audio's out for a minute. Doing it live.
Can you guys hear me now?
Yep.
There you go. Gotcha.
Yeah, my AirPods, you know, these fancy Apple AirPods, they died after 45 minutes, full charge. So. But, yeah, that's garbage.
They're so worth it, aren't they?
What's that?
Worth the money, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, they're a few years old now, but, I mean, come on. But, yeah, so New York scene, I mentioned a bunch of bands tonight, you know, friends of ours, and that's kind of like where I put my interest. I know there's a lot of bands that we're friends with up here. That it seems to be a vibrant scene pre-pandemic. It totally was. I honestly don't know. I know a few venues have closed. So I don't know the situation. I don't know what the live situation is going to be moving forward, where our band's going to play. You know, if 7-8 venues close where metal bands can play, that's going to create a logjam, and it's going to be, you know, so it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out. But there's places in Long Island that we play, like Shaker's Pub, which is a cool hidden spot that we play some sick fucking shows there. I mean, we put lineups out that you know, I think if people saw this shit, it would be, you know, it would open some eyes because it's all talented bands. It's pretty great.
I've only been to New York once in my life, and that was when I came up to one of the New Jersey Metal Fest. Mm-hmm. A buddy of mine from Blood Throne, I was crashing with him, and he's like, you know, we're going to drive into the city, and showed me around, and that was about it. I need to make it back up there sometime.
Yeah, spend some time. I would advise maybe not anytime soon. Yep. How about a little while?
I'll wait a little bit.
Yeah, I haven't been to New York. I live in Pennsylvania now, in the Poconos, in the middle of the woods. You know, I work in New York City, so my commute was ridiculous.
I still commute to Manhattan every day from Jersey, five days a week.
I can't even imagine, man.
And I have a dude, my commute was a full-time job time wise. And I haven't been to Manhattan since March 12th, 2020. And I hope to not go back there anytime soon, unless I'm playing a sick fucking show. And it's the only thing I want to go back there for.
I work retail. I manage a wine store in Manhattan.
Nice.
So it's been crazy.
High class wine store, right? Let's be honest here. Not some low rent.
Like
not
a gentleman.
Some, yeah, not some low rent garbage.
Right.
like a gentleman.
Like a proper gentleman. Justin, Dave, do you guys have any questions before we go to a different topic?
I mean, we've talked pretty much at length about the scene and stuff. I think we can move on.
Let's do it, man. I know Rick and I know Tom, you guys are both video game fanatics like me. Oh. Let's touch on
absolutely,
it.
Absolutely, man.
Are you guys playing anything currently right now?
Recently I've been indulging in the Raspberry Pi 3.
Have you? Rick, I've always been wanting to do that.
Do you build an emulator on there? Is that what you're doing?
Rick did everything for me. It was like a birthday or a Christmas present or something, and like Rick was all over the place. He it was crazy. But he hooked it up, and basically most games on the whole libraries of Neo Geo, Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis, Master System, regular NES, Game Gear,
TurboGrafx. It's got everything on there. Even Atari, I think I put on there.
But here's the thing, and here's where the nerd comes out. Is I've been basically discovering certain games don't work on the Neo Geo in particular. I've been nerding out on Neo Geo lately.
Yeah.
And I basically discovered that there's a bunch of games that unfortunately don't work on the Raspberry Pi, right? Just in particular Neo Geo. It's really the only one that there's any issues. But anyway. So I found there's a bunch on the Xbox store.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I said, fuck it. And I bought a couple, and I've been playing them on the Xbox.
Yeah, I was going to recommend that. I got a bunch on the Switch. I got like 10 of them on the Switch. Yeah,
they're great.
There's that one on the Switch. There's like that one company that does like just a bunch of different retro games.
Yeah, Hamster, I think, right? Hamster is one of them.
That's awesome, man.
Which games are you playing? Which Neo Geo games?
Blazing Star is pretty much my number one. And another one is the what the hell is it? Shock Troopers.
I don't think I ever played that game.
Yeah, or is it Shock Troopers?
I'm a huge fan of the Metal Slug series.
Yeah, man.
Oh, fucking A. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
On my Switch right now. These are the Neo Geo games here.
Lovely. Oh, yeah.
Lovely.
Wow. So I got Aero Fighters 2, Aero Fighters 3. Both of those are fucking sick games. A lot of these are shmups. Alpha Mission 2.
Dude, I'm a huge shmup fan. Yeah, there's a thing you need to get. I'm going to send you a link to it. I bought it a couple years ago. It basically lets you turn your Switch. You have the original Switch.
Yeah.
You turn your Switch sideways, and then you can play vertically shmup games.
And pinball too. I 3D printed a stand. I have a 3D printer.
Oh, did you really?
I was able to find a STL file, and I printed it. It got screwed up, so I gotta reprint it. But I'm gonna print one because it's pretty sick to sit here. It's Tate mode? It's some mode they call it, and you put there. Yeah. Pinball effects is awesome like that. Yep. But Ikaruga, dude. Like that, man.
That game is still brutal as hell, but so good.
Yeah, I didn't have the original GameCube. No, Dreamcast, right? Dreamcast
GameCube. First and GameCube. Yeah,
I didn't have those versions. That's sick, man. I had to wait until the 360 version, and I think that's the Switch version too.
Are you guys playing any current games right now? Especially like Switch. What are you playing?
On the Switch, let's see here. My Switch hasn't been seeing much use lately because I did get the Xbox Series X. Even though there's not a ton of stuff out for that, I've been catching up on a lot of backlog. I just finished Fallout 4. I did Dragon Quest XI. That was awesome. That was on Game Pass. And by the way, Game Pass, you know, is the best.
Fuck yes. It really is.
Yeah, and MLB The Show, which I put hundreds of hours every year into, that's coming out on Game Pass.
David. Isn't that weird? That's coming out. It's a Sony game coming out on the Xbox system. Yeah,
and on their on their service there that they've been pushing. That's a big score, man.
I'm gonna recommend a game to all you guys. I've been actually playing it for the past couple of weeks with my wife. It's a complete couch co-op game. You can play it online too. It's called It Takes Two. It's a it's a fucking weird concept. Have you heard of this game yet?
No, I haven't.
So imagine it's a weird story. So it's about a couple who's in the midst of a divorce.
Oh, I have heard of this game.
Oh my god, dude. So the daughter had created these little wooden dolls of her parents, and she cries on them when they're like after breakfast when they were fighting and shit, and these dolls come to life, and then the parents go into a coma and become the doll. They get trapped in these dolls. And then the rest of the game is sort of like Honey, I Shrunk the Divorced Parents type of game. But it is so amazing. Every single level, it's completely different. And you have like this book that's trying to be like a Latin lover, trying to tell you how to repair your relationship. And there's levels like where you're in a snow globe and then one person has like, part of a magnet, and the other person has the other side, and you have to work together to get through all these obstacles, and you're fighting fucking like bees and like gophers and shit.
And that's on Game Pass?
It's not on Game Pass, not yet, but if you have somebody, if you have somebody like me and my wife, and playing it together, and you can only play it multiplayer.
Is it helpful for your relationship?
Well, we had a good relationship before, so. Maybe, yes. We're learning stuff about
each other. Okay. It didn't make it worse then.
Make it worse.
Okay.
Usually playing multiplayer games, I'm like especially the Lego games, I'm just like, fucking do this, do that. But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But this game is it's a beautiful game too. It looks just like you're playing like a Pixar movie.
Wow. Okay. For sure, man.
Nice, man.
They did not pay me to say that either. I actually paid them to buy the game. So,
how much is that? Is that a $20?
Like a $39 game?
Oh, $40.
Yeah.
I played the Medium, which was a Xbox Series X game.
I started that. I got like maybe an hour into it. I haven't picked it back up yet.
Yeah, I finished it. I thought it was interesting. It was a little clunky, but it had some cool concepts that it was trying to do. The whole split screen element where you have to control one character in the one screen to get an item from the – yeah, it's pretty cool. You know, that was a good game. And now I just getting to another backlog game, Red Dead 2. I kind of just fired up.
That is one of the best games I've played in the last 5 to 10 years. It was so good.
That's what everyone says, man. And I worship that first one.
If you liked the first one, the second one is leaps and bounds.
Good. Better. I can't wait, man. I just started it. I must have pre-ordered it somehow because I got all these pre-order bonuses when I downloaded it the other day. So I think my wife played it. It's cool. And I got all this extra stuff for that. So I'm going to get into that. And then Rocket League, of course.
You're a Rocket Leaguer?
Yeah. Love me some Rocket League, man. That game is good.
I just started the second DLC for Doom Eternal, Dave.
I need to get those.
If you haven't played Doom Eternal, Rick, yeah, I know they're it's on Game Pass. Yeah. The DLC, if you thought the Doom Eternal was difficult.
I didn't finish it. I got to get it. Yeah, right.
They fucking ramp this shit up. Like, the new DLC is like the first 2 minutes into the game, you're like, holy shit. All right. I got to like buckle down and get through this, you know?
There's no learning curve on the DLC. They're like, okay, if you've already played through Doom Eternal, you're good enough to play.
It took me a while to get back into it, man, because I haven't played. I beat Doom Eternal. I played a little bit of the first DLC, but I didn't finish it. But I need to go back. But it takes you a while to remember, okay, this weapon destroys this monster and you have to do this. It's like a symphony of shit you have to do, you know? Yeah. And there's some new enemies in this one that just destroy the hell out of you, man.
Looking forward to it. I need to get a hold of those.
So, Tom, a little birdie told me you're into comic books.
Oh, fucking A, man.
So,
I love comic books.
So the very first comic you ever read, how old were you?
What was it? Oh, man.
Let me preface it. Are you a DC or Marvel?
Okay, so I neither.
Yeah, he shits on that shit. He don't want to hear about DC and Marvel. You don't want to hear about that.
No. It's not that. But
I'm just kidding. I'm just fucking around.
But as far as the movies are concerned, but we're not even going to go there. No. So where I'd like to go is a little place called Huntington Village. The year is 1992, 93.
He's painting this fucking picture for us, too.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Beautiful village.
Yeah, there's two places you can go. Because to do anything as a kid, you go into town. You go into town. You might try to steal a candy bar. Or you try to get a pack of smokes from the smoke machine in the pool hall. Or ask somebody to buy a beer or, you know, whatever. Allegedly.
Things kids do.
Allegedly
you do these things. Right?
I've heard about that.
So there were two places. There were two places. Actually, that came a little later. What am I even saying? So there were two places that I would get comic books. One was Bailey's Comics, where that was where, like, the real comic people were. Like, they had the high-end stuff behind the counter, all that shit, you know. Like, and it was a little more – like they knew what was up. They knew the prices. They knew their comics. They knew they were a little judgy, but they were cool. They were a little judgy, but they were cool. Then there was this other place called Baseball Heaven, where it was some fucking ripoff guy, fat fucking smelly dude, who wanted to rip off all the kids. You know, he probably had fake sign shit or whatever.
Straight out of The Simpsons.
Just like comic book guy, right?
but as soon as you walked in to the right, it was always that week's comics. And it was so awesome, man. I remember going and picking up comics every week. And I fell in love with The Amazing Spider-Man. And The Amazing Spider-Man was the only comic that I subscribed to and convinced my parents to have it sent in the mail.
Yeah, I remember that.
And that was the best thing in the world, opening the mailbox and getting that.
Yeah.
But I was going to say, I distinctly remember going to Baseball Heaven. That's awesome. And being...
Classic.
McFarlane, yes.
Being blown away by this new publisher, Image. And you had Spawn, you had Pit, you had, and it was all about getting the number ones, and it exploded. Yeah. It just totally exploded. You had Spawn, Pit, Brigade, Youngblood,
Prophet,
Prophet, Max,
Wildcats.
Yeah, it, the list goes on.
Savage Dragon.
Dude, Savage Dragon was my favorite. Yeah, that was my number one. That was my number one.
That and the Max, man.
Yeah.
Fucking A, man. I love that shit. And I still I was loyal to Spider-Man. Spider-Man was like my absolute number one. Savage Dragon was my absolute number two, but number one in Image. And those were my two main. And I loved those as growing up. Now once they did the whole spin of like the clone. Mm-hmm. I lost interest, and I kind of walked away, honestly, from like comics altogether for a few years. Then, like many years later, I got back into it, and I would say like after college, so I was probably about 24 or whatever that is, right? 23, and I've actually picked out a couple of things here that I want to shout out Avatar Press. Avatar Press is amazing.
This is why you should be watching the live stream, because we're about to do a show and tell here.
Nice. Yeah, dude. Avatar Press is amazing because they put out shit like this. First thing I'm going to show you guys is Gravel. Warren Ellis.
Oh, fucking Warren Ellis, yes.
In his finest. It's great. The first two, that's the first one. Here's the second one. They are incredible. He is basically, ex-military. He, you know, combat wise, he's like 10 out of 10. And then he's also a magician. So he also has all these powers. So he's like 9 out of 10 on that, 10 out of 10 on that. It's ridiculous. It's out there. The art is sharp. The art is really, really good. Mike Wolfer, really amazing. Highly recommend it. The first three are incredible. Then they came back with a fourth one. I won't show you. It's good, but it doesn't touch the first three. And it came out like 10 years later or something, 8 years later.
I hate when that shit happens, man. When something comes back and it's not nowhere near as good, Arrested Development, you know? you know, something right. like that, you know?
Another one is Extremity.
Oh, yeah.
Image, published.
Dania Warren Johnson, right?
Absolutely. Love this shit. I actually need to see if volume 3 is out yet, but those are the first two volumes, kind of like family oriented, medieval kind of vibe. That's kind of like pre, you know, any type of history, you know, kind of thing. So
I got to ask you, dude, J.J. Warren Johnson. I love his stuff. Have you read Murder Falcon?
I have.
Okay. I have all the original, like, the different covers of the, like, pay tribute to like Pantera and like Judas Priest.
So good, man. I fucking love that shit.
I don't know anything about this shit. What is this shit?
You need to know about Murder Falcon, dude.
Rick,
I buy my comics these days on the iPad. Not that it matters,
It was Image, wasn't it? Was it Murder Falcon through?
I think it
should be on there. Comic.
So you should be able to buy it. So basically, it's the most heavy metal comic you'll read in a long time. This guy, Daniel Warren Johnson, he's a fucking metalhead through and through. And they put out these tribute album covers, like comic covers. There was like even a fucking Bolt Swerve one, man. I was like, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's really awesome shit.
Hell yeah.
Can't recommend it enough.
Cool.
The premise though is this guy who's in a band and somehow discovers he has the power through his music to summon the Murder Falcon, who is like this big ripped like heavy metal bird.
I think I've seen a picture of that he
summons to fight monsters and shit.
Yeah, so, dude, he rips, dude.
That's sick. That sounds sick.
We had Daniel Warren Johnson was a guest at Comic Palooza like in 2018, the year before this series came out. I'm like, man, if only it had come out before, I'd have got you signed all my shit, you know?
Yeah, that's cool, man. That reminds me. I just took all my comics back from my parents' house that have been sitting there since 1994. And I was looking, you had just mentioned getting something signed. That I had Thanos Quest, both books signed by Ron Lim. Starlin.
Yeah. Ron Lim.
And I don't know what those books are, man. I fucking looking through those boxes, looking for these books. I know I have other copies, but I don't have my signed ones. That kind of bummed me out.
The originals are worth some money now, man.
These were originals. This was 1990. I met them at a convention in the Hotel Pennsylvania, right across from Madison Square Garden. They used to have comic shows every month.
Love that.
You know? Remember that shit, dude? Remember that shit?
Yeah. I went to a couple of conventions when I was a kid. Yeah. I was very lucky. My parents took me in. So sick. And speaking of Jim Starlin, I love Dreadstar.
Yeah, Dreadstar's good stuff.
Dreadstar, that's awesome, dude. I fucking love Dreadstar.
Pretty much everything Starlin does is good.
Absolutely. I love the there's a Batman story. Fuck. It's the one where there's a really good Starlin Batman story where I think he gets drugged. And he starves him and shit. And he's like tied up, he's all fucked up. And he kind of goes crazy a little bit.
Ten Knights of the Beast.
Maybe. I forget the name escapes me right now, but I remember talking about it with my buddy.
Man, nothing beats those old school comic book shows in like a hotel ballroom. Man, we used to go with my buddy and his like little brother, and his little brother, we would fucking trade him cigarettes for like high end comics that he had. I feel bad about it now, but back then I was like, I didn't care.
That's cool.
Speaking of high-end comics, which I also can't find, is the Frank Miller Wolverine number one.
Oh, man.
I had that in mint condition. There's certain books I'm missing like five or six choice ones that are upsetting me right now. Very upsetting. So
we didn't bring you on to the show to upset you so much, Rick. I apologize.
Let's think of everything that I've lost. Let's talk about nothing but loss.
I'll show you guys. So this one is actually, this might be my favorite of the whole thing.
Yeah.
I love this one. It's another Avatar Press Absolution.
Oh, Christos Gage, yeah. I haven't heard of this one.
This is a great... great comic, man. It's dark, it's bizarre, it's fucked up. It's a great story, basically. And also it's a little bit of the same deal with volume two. It came out like a little later than it should have, and it's good. It's not as good as the first one is like classic good. It's so good. And basically it's this guy who's a cop, and he doesn't like the fact that he's finding really disgusting people, and he's not allowed to kill them. He has to like bring them in and follow the rules. And I know you can't touch me, and you know, and all this kind of shit. He starts taking the law into his own hands, and it's really cool because he's like a superhero.
Okay.
He's like he also has all these really interesting powers. And then there's all these interesting characters. It's just the way it's written and the way it's really good. It's really dark. I highly recommend it. It's like probably my favorite. Evolution is a newer one from Image. It's pretty fucked up. You can tell by the artwork. It's essentially appropriate for what we're going through. And I recommend it. I'll leave it at that. The Realm is another one that's really fucking good. Modern. Seth M. Peck and Jeremy Hanou, don't know these dudes other than this, and I fucking love it. It's so good. It's fucked up. It's like a post-apocalyptic world. Here's the first one. That gives you a much better idea of the world.
Oh, yeah.
It is fucking crazy. These things just show up, dude. It's Earth, but these things show up.
Do me a favor. We're going to put all these in the show notes. So we want people to be able to look for this shit too later. So Rick is going to say, Rick and Tom, send me all your shit. We're going to put links to everything.
Sick.
Great, man.
Awesome, man. Have you guys, speaking of like cool Image stuff, have you guys watched Invincible yet?
I haven't. No,
I have not. No, you know, Unfortunately, my free time has been very limited because I recently became a father.
And, that makes sense. Congratulations.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Last April. So it was right at the start, you know, like right when everything fell to shit. I had a very pregnant wife. So it was scary, but obviously everything went well, and it's been awesome. It's been amazing. It's been such a gratifying, challenging, but like super rewarding experience.
I can imagine. And it gave you a lot more time just to be there too.
Yeah, it's really great, man. Like the first couple of months, I was there.
Yeah,
and that's like not allowed in the United States. You know what I mean? Like it's definitely not.
It's not the norm.
It's not looked upon in a good way.
Yeah,
the man taking the paternity. At least like, you know, that's like what's been drilled.
Richard Christie just took a 3-month paternity leave from Howard Stern.
Everyone knows Richard Christie. Well, if you got the right job, then you're good to go.
Right.
And they let him know. You know, they let him hear about it a little bit.
But yeah, man. It you know, it was great too. During that time, I was at home, and newborn babies they do sleep a lot. You know, now it's crazy. Now I'm like, I'm kind of losing my mind a little bit because she's about to turn one, so it's a little more intense because she's running around, a little more demanding and that kind of thing, you know. But and it's awesome, but newborn babies, they sleep, so I was able to write music. Mm. And I had time to I would sit outside and play my acoustic and just write. I have the next Buried the Waters album done.
Sick.
We were going to record it in I think April, right, Rick?
It was coming up. It was going to be around there, yeah. And then
everything. Or June or whatever. And yeah, we're going
crazy. Yeah. So we'll do that soon. We're going to do that soon.
But yeah, so anyway, to come back to movies, I haven't been watching a lot of movies, but I did recently watch Phantasm, the five Phantasm films for the first time. Me and my wife watched each one every night consecutively. And I gotta say, I really enjoyed them. I thought they were there's a lot of holes, unfortunately. but they're fun. I really liked the last one, and my wife hated it, and then like this, and most people hated it. It's got like bad reviews. I thought it was really good.
I enjoy it too. I think it's a pretty good modern version of that story. I have the remastered set of the original ones, which is pretty cool.
That's sick.
But I haven't gone back and watched all of them. I only watched the first one and the most recent one. I need to watch the middle ones again.
I don't think I've seen a Phantasm movie since like I was much, much younger. It's been a while.
Yeah, they're good, man. Go back and watch them, man. I would recommend like watching them all, you know, all together too. Cause for me, the fifth one, it led up to it, and it kind of hit home.
I've been on a quest to finally watch movies in my life that I'd never seen before.
I heard that Godfather discussion last time, man. I was ready to chime in on that one, you know.
Yeah, go for it, dude. Yeah. So I watched all three Godfathers, five Rocky movies.
Wow.
I saw Jaws last year for the first time.
So cool.
It's just like, I don't know how some of these iconic movies
I've got a laundry list of iconic movies I've never seen that I've seen.
I got a couple
here.
It'd be embarrassing, but you know, Rocky, when you're a kid, you're growing up around the same time me.
Yeah, huh? I never saw him, dude.
I guess it's a New York Italian thing. It's probably a New York thing. you remember that bit in Eddie Murphy Raw about Rocky, you know, and with Italian guys? I'm half Italian, so I got, you know, in 1982 when Rocky III came out, I'm 6 years old and shit. That was like the end of that was the biggest thing, man. Eye of the Tiger, I had that shit on 7-inch. I used to play that shit on my fucking little 1978 record player that had disco lights in the front that would light up.
Nice.
Disco lights.
Never heard that one.
No, dude, it was like a little record player. You lifted it up, and it was, now that I'm thinking about it, for the first time in fucking 40 years, man, It was, it had like, you know, the '70s and shit. It looked like a roller rink.
I remember the dance floor.
Yeah, man, it was really cool. And I used to sit, jump on the bed, listen to Eye of the Tiger, Survivor and shit, man. Oh man, not on. So, but yeah, Rocky was great, you know, and,
yeah, you remember those old records? Like I had Transformers.
Oh yeah.
It was, you remember the Disney Haunted House one?
Yeah, no. I have that actually.
Oh, fuck it. Hey, that's dude. Hmm. Love that shit.
The sounds of the haunted house and all that.
Yeah, I remember actually being scared as a kid. But it was fun. But it was like, I wanted to be, you know, like I would be like, let's do it again, you know?
All right, Rick, I'm not going to let you think that we forgot. You said there's a couple movies that you'd be embarrassed that you've never seen. What are they?
Platoon. I never saw Platoon.
I've never seen that either.
It's fucking crazy because I love Vietnam movies.
It's going to be a date. I
love it. Oh shit! Yeah, we're gonna have to do that. Platoon was one. There was. I know this is gonna be crazy. The first Predator. I don't think I saw.
That is a shock.
I've seen bits and pieces of that. You know, I love Arnold.
Wait. Have you seen Predator 2?
I've seen Predator 2 somehow. Like, you know, one time.
Get out.
I'm disappointed.
Get out.
Wasn't Carl Weathers in Predator 2 or some shit like that? Wasn't Carl Weathers in one of those?
Carl Weathers
was in the first one.
Oh, he was in the first one.
Danny Glover was in the second one.
Jesse the Body Ventura.
Predator 2 is like a comedy almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like watching Ghostbusters 2 and not watching the first one. It's embarrassing. I'm a disaster. I'm a disgusting disaster.
Yeah, it happens. It happens.
So, you know, I think those are the, I was trying to think what other like classic One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. If you go back a little bit,
I just watched that for the first time. I don't know, 5 or 6 months ago. So
recommend watching in this day and age. Yeah, I'm sure. Right?
It's fantastic. Oh, yeah. It's very, very good. And it's like the cast in it's unreal. You're going to see people and be like, oh, holy shit. There's, you know, it just keeps happening.
Yeah. And you like other Kubrick movies, you'll love it.
Oh, I mean, man. Yeah. He's, you know, I love Kubrick. And I remember when the DVD box set came out in like 1998, that was like the biggest thing in my life that year. I was like, holy shit.
Like, I just saw The Shining for the first time last year after I saw the sequel. Yeah.
Wow, that's great. See, being able to see these things is cool because you know you're experiencing them for the first time. And that, you said Scarface too, right? Scarface.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet.
How about Goodfellas?
Wow. Oh, Goodfellas is like top five movie for me.
Okay.
Yeah, totally.
A lot of that was filmed where I'm from on Staten Island, New York.
that opening one.
Go around. Go get the jackets. Go look at the jackets.
Yeah.
Holding the kids, slamming on all the fucking every single apartment.
I saw that in the movie theater. All those movies I saw in the movie theater, starting from Godfather 3, which, you know, was unfortunate. But that was Christmas Day of 1990. I saw that in the theater.
Yeah.
The
biggest difference between, Godfather 1 was really good, 2.
Oh, man.
Then 3, it's like, all right, so that Al Pacino was already in full Al Pacino mode.
Yeah.
1 and 2, and he wasn't quite there yet. But by the time he got to 3 years, like, man, he's just chewing that scenery up.
Yeah.
This is true. I've only ever seen the first Godfather movie.
Oh, dude, you got to see the second one, man. The Robert De Niro one, man.
One's the best one.
The first two, I mean, for me, I go between 1 and 2. I mean, the first one, you got Brando and James Caan in the greatest, but, you know, 2 is also amazing. Fucking Bruno Kirby cameo in there, a young Bruno Kirby.
I don't even remember him seeing it.
Yeah, he was in the flashback scenes with De Niro.
Oh, okay. Oh, wow.
Do you remember when they were moving a carpet in one scene?
Yeah.
That was Bruno Kirby there. So, yeah.
Holy crap.
Young man there.
Yeah, the third one, like, I saw the direct version of it.
Good. That's the way to see it. Yeah. That's the way to see it, man.
That's what I heard, because apparently the original theatrical version was just, like, disjointed or something.
It featured the daughter a lot. Daughter, you know, a lot more. And she wasn't, she became a great director, but, you know, she wasn't her acting chops. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, Sofia Coppola, right?
Yes.
So the wife, Adrian from the Rocky movies is also sister in the Godfather movie.
Of course. When you said that, I almost drove off the road. I was like, you're like, do you know who? I was like, Talia Shire! Talia Shire!
And which is weird because I didn't know she's the mother of Jason Schwartzman, too.
Yeah, it's a whole, and Nicolas Cage is a cousin or Francis Ford Coppola's nephew. I don't even know the situation, but yeah.
My favorite Francis Ford Coppola directed movie is Captain EU, and I'm joking. Captain EU.
Francis Ford Coppola directed Captain EO. You're talking about the Michael Jackson thing?
Yes. Did you not know that? Produced by George Lucas, Steven Spielberg, and directed by Coppola.
I saw that the year it opened. What was that, like 1987 or something?
Yeah, it got to be like 86 or something like that.
Holy shit. I haven't even thought about that in forever. Wow, that's crazy.
And one of the backup dancers, and this is like trivia that's going to blow you away. He's talked about it on his podcast. You know who Doug Benson is?
No, I don't.
He's a he did a super high me. He's a stoner comedian.
Yeah, okay. Pothead comedian.
Right up my alley. All right,
yeah. He was one of the backup dancers in that Captain EO movie.
That's hilarious.
He's one of the backup dancers?
Yeah. What? What is going on there?
That's pretty funny, man.
I remember the last time I took my uncle to Disney World was right after Michael Jackson passed away, and they brought back Captain EO, and they had it in the theater. They had updated the theater, so like the seats moved around to the beat of the songs and stuff like that. So you were sitting there when like the beat of like your chair was just bouncing up and down. So weird.
That's pretty cool. Funny, man. That was Epcot, right?
It was Epcot, yeah.
It's been a long time, man. I haven't been to Disney since. The last time I was in Disney, the only memory I have for that, for some reason, was the Grand Floridian. Is that what the hotel
was? Yeah.
It had just opened that spring or whatever, and I was, brand new. So it was like 1989 or 88 or something like that.
Wow.
And in the arcade where I spent most of my fucking time, they had they had the original Street Fighter with the huge fucking buttons that you would have to punch, and the game sucks so bad. It sucks so bad. You would have to punch these fucking buttons. These are
now, huge now don't, buttons. You're not talking about Street Fighter 2, people. You're talking about the original Street Fighter 1. Yeah.
The World Warrior, that one, yeah. So look that one up and try to play that shit.
No.
And then it reminded me of when Tom was talking about his comic shop back in the day. In the comic shop in Tottenville in Staten Island, they had Street Fighter 2 in 1992. Mm-hmm. So when I saw it, they're like, yo, come down and play fucking Street Fighter 2. Holy shit. And I was like, it's true. It was a big deal.
I remember, man. Everybody was, mine was blown.
So I go in there, there's like fucking 1,000 kids in there, and I say, holy shit, this is the game that I played in Disney World, but you know, the new one. And this is, you know, four years later. And it was, you know, obviously a game changer by that point, man.
That game took the world by storm, man.
Yeah, it did.
Funny, like, because I've got two girls, and like they both like retro video games and stuff, you know. And there's there's a retro arcade couple miles from our house, and it's you like pay an entry fee, and then everything's free to play, right?
That's the way to do it.
And so the girls are like, "Hey, Dad, come play Street Fighter. I'm kick your ass or whatever." And I'm like, "You're in my house now." Hold on.
No, you're playing.
You're nine, and I've been playing Street Fighter for 30 years.
That's right.
Yeah, man.
Don't I mean. Give me Blanca, and I will kick your ass.
My guy was always Ken. I was always
I was a Ryu guy. So
I played Chun-Li.
I would always switch it up. I like fucking around. I did too,
but like if I ever got stuck, fall back on Ryu and I got it all taken care of.
Nice. Yeah.
But dude, when that game came out on Super Nintendo in 90, it was late 92, I guess, right? It was like October 92. Dude, let me tell you, it was
the
like
new challengers.
It was like $90 for that fucking game.
Yeah, it was.
You know, and shit to buy, but it was worth every penny, man.
People think that video games are expensive now. They don't remember like how much like a Super Nintendo game used to actually be. It was like $90.
Yeah, I'd
be like one kid in the neighborhood who had it on SNES, and we'd all go over there every single afternoon and have like hour long tournaments.
It was a great version. It was a great port, man. It was like all, you know, for the time, it was like almost arcade perfect, you know. I mean, you know, for the hardware.
Dude, get fucking down here right now.
There's a game. Wait till you see this fucking game. Holy shit. Get on my fucking bike and go down there and shit.
Yeah, we used to go to like the Stop and Go. Me and my buddy, Rick, that I grew up with, we used to go to Stop and Go and just when Street Fighter, man, and then like Mortal Kombat came out.
It was like two or three years later Mortal Kombat came out and like changed the game all over again.
Pretty much, yeah.
And then the Super Nintendo version of there's the Genesis and Super Nintendo of Mortal Kombat.
Yeah,
and
I remember. Genesis
blood and Super Nintendo.
Yeah, like, nobody wanted to play Mortal Kombat on Super Nintendo because they took all the blood out.
It was sweat in the first one.
Yeah,
it was like green blood or some shit.
Some of them were green.
I think in the options you could turn it to green.
Yep.
Wow.
It's crazy.
Stupid.
Yeah. You mentioned Disney, Rick.
Those motherfuckers.
Yeah. I'm actually going to Disney in like 3 weeks, man.
Whoa.
We're spending Yeah, we've been trying to do this since before the pandemic. It's our.
I remember seeing your post about that.
Yeah, it's like we're actually timed it to be our like we're going to be there during our 15-year wedding anniversary, which is pretty cool.
That works.
That's where we spent our honeymoon. You know,
fuck, that's awesome.
But no arcades are going to be open. That's for damn sure.
Yeah,
it's going to be a different experience, but it's still going to be fun. You know what I mean?
Enjoy yourself, man.
Yeah, have fun, man.
We talked about Rick's movie that he's never seen. What about you, Tom? What's your guilty? I've never seen this.
You know, I'm not even sure, man. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure they're out there. I'm drawing
nothing jumping to mind, huh? I'm trying to think of a couple more that I have that I'm embarrassed about. You know, a couple that I'm embarrassed about, which I can't.
No, Justin,
there's some that like I wear like a badge of honor. That's like, hey, I've never seen this movie. I'm never going to
like what?
Titanic. I've never seen Titanic, okay. And I never
Back
will.
Mountain.
That's never. Also, more James Cameron stuff. Avatar. Never seen Avatar. Don't care.
Yeah, you're not.
Anything James. Anything James Cameron after like 1992. I don't care about.
What a flip flop, right? Like early stuff is great, you know. But yeah, no. I'm not really embarrassed by it, but there's a lot of comic movies I have not seen. A lot of them, I just never watched it. I don't know what it is, man. Like, I don't want to go on the rant, but I kind of compared it one time to my buddy. We were talking about it, and I was just like, "Yo," I was like, "Let's compare it to the Ramones."
Okay.
Like, I love the Ramones. Do I want to go see the Ramones cover band? Like, yes. But not really. You know what I mean? Like, do you know what I mean?
For a novelty, maybe for a little while.
That's how I feel about it. Like, I honestly, I hate it, but I look and I see Robert Downey Jr., the actor. That's what I see. Like, I don't see Tony Stark, man.
Unfortunately, that's kind of how I've been for the last 10, 15 years with all media, like all movies and shows. Like, I got so like taken out of it just by seeing the actor themselves instead of the character, and it turned me off to a lot of things. And for a long time, I wasn't really watching anything. And now I'm trying to catch up on a lot of things.
Yeah, I want to give stuff a chance now. I think I'm coming around a little bit, and I'd like to at least check shit out. And also too, I was going to say it wasn't just that. That kind of made other things a little more obvious to me. Like the fact that a lot of those films are a little bit more flashy and just big explosions and that kind of thing. And it's just not my style. I do love the characters. I do appreciate the fact that it is, you know, I don't hate the fact that my little thing is now big. You kind of get over that at some point, but it's also like, I just don't like, I'm not 1,000% on the way that they're doing it. I guess is what I'm trying to say. So that brings me to say I am actually kind of excited to see the Snyder film.
Okay,
I'm actually excited to watch that. I haven't watched it yet because
I'm going to watch that soon. I'm going to watch that soon as well.
Yeah, but I'm excited to give that a chance because
I sat through it. I will say it's better than the.
It's a lot better than the original.
It's a lot better.
It's a lot better than the original.
Yeah,
it's fun. It's a fun movie. I mean, it has flaws, but like. Well, you luckily, can't make a comic movie that doesn't have flaws. Like it's true, but it's fun.
Luckily, the original is one of the movies I've never seen, so add that to the list.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, then you won't be jaded by the new one. Then you'll enjoy it more.
Cool. Cool. The last DC movie I think I saw was the Superman one where fucking Metropolis was like destroyed.
Was it the Man of Steel?
Yeah, that was probably it. That was probably the last DC movie I saw. I dug that movie. I thought that was dark as fuck. I was like, holy shit, man. There's so much death
occurring. I thought that one was okay. It was all right. I haven't been super impressed with anything else that I've seen that's come since then.
Right. So I'm not missing much.
Wonder Woman, the first Wonder Woman is pretty good, but everything else until
the first two thirds of Wonder Woman is good.
Yeah, that's true. The ending sucked.
Yeah,
the ending sucked. You introduce that boss fight, and you're like, come on, it's horrible.
But it's all good up until then.
You know what a comic movie they have to make and do it right finally is a Silver Surfer movie. They gotta do that for if talking about Marvel, I mean he was in those Fantastic Four movies, right? Those are terrible movies.
Yeah, there's a lot they'd have to do in the cosmic Marvel universe before they can really do Silver Surfer right.
Yes,
I think eventually they're going to. I mean, they're already expanding the cosmic cinematic universe, so
they need to do Galactus right. So, I mean, not just picking up
Adam Warlock. Yeah. But what I did watch recently actually was recently. I'm in the basement right now. I'm hearing things. There's some weird shit going on.
Marvel knows we're talking shit about their movies.
I recently rewatched the first three RoboCop and then watched the remake after
shit.
That.
Oh,
and it was they were so much better than I remember them being. Mm-hmm. I actually remember them being kind of I walked away kind of thinking that they were a little too B or whatever. I was totally off. I was totally wrong. Those films are amazing. They're really weird and interesting. A lot of selling you a lot of commercials.
Yeah,
like edited. It's really, really unique and good.
The remake was the Joel Kinnaman, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
I don't really like the remake much, but the original was great.
Yeah, I didn't hate the remake. I thought it was watchable.
It's watchable. It's watchable.
Yeah, it's watchable. But agreed. It doesn't touch the originals.
It's serviceable, as we say.
I remember seeing the first one in the theater. I was like 10 years old, 11 years old as shit. And that was another violent movie, man, for the time when you're a 10-year-old kid.
They're very violent.
The Ed 201 scene, man, that was shit.
We now know why Rick is the way he is now.
This guy that I work with.
Because of RoboCop.
This guy that I work with, he used to volunteer to go be an extra in movies and stuff. And he tried to get into RoboCop 2 and he got hired on as an extra. But when push came to shove, he got cut out of the scene. But they needed a car to drive by in one of the scenes. So they borrowed his car and they drove his car through a scene. So my coworker's claim to fame is that his car was in RoboCop 2.
You guys don't know RoboCop 2 was actually filmed in Houston. Yeah. A lot of the exterior stuff is Houston, Texas.
RoboCop 1 was shot in Dallas.
Yeah, exactly right. It's not Detroit.
That's where I grew up. So,
oh, cool. Nice.
So there's
the main like CCP building. Yeah. Like the most of that is a matte painting, but like the bottom three floors of it is like I can't remember. It's like the city hall or the downtown library. I can't remember which one.
I think it's a library, from what I heard.
Yeah, I think that's right.
The last time I was in Texas, sorry, Karen. Yeah,
the scene in 2 where they're in like the, it's actually at the George R. Brown Convention Center, where the big pop culture convention happens. It's like, man, they shot RoboCop 2 here. One of the last jobs I had, the reason why they became what they were is because they got hired to build computers so they could edit RoboCop 2, and that's how they got into the film business.
That's pretty cool.
Nice. Were you gonna say, Rick? I'm sorry.
We were talking about Texas. That was the last time I was in Texas. Was when we played the November to Dismember. I saw there as well.
San Antonio, wasn't it?
99. Yep.
What year was that?
That was 99. That was November of 99, and we played Gray Skies Fallen. And Ryan Lapinski, who were in, who later went on to form Unearthly Trance.
Right.
He played bass for us that show. Which is a cool, like, weird thing. And I actually found video of that whole set, and there's like a song that we never recorded or anything, and we fucking played this new song, and I was like, what the fuck are we playing? It's not even finished. The song wasn't even fucking finished, and it was like 13 minutes long, but it was good. I mean, people dug it and shit. That was a show we played right before In Flames. Actually, we played right before Moonspell, and then In Flames went on.
Cool. Yeah, he was fucking drunk that night. I remember watching them live. That was a very interesting night over the whole show, man. I remember I was interviewing In Flames, and I don't remember who in the band it was, but they had Mainstream Resistance in their hand, the magazine, fanzine I used to do. And he's like, hey, man, can I see your magazine? I was like, sure, dude. We're in the middle of the interview. He, like, rolls it up so we could, like, do a joint. I was like, all right, whatever you want to do with it. It's cool.
Sometimes that's like, you're in the need. You gotta roll with something, you know.
That was such a killer show. That was like SOD was one of the headliners, and
2000 Milwaukee was ridiculously amazing, dude. Anathema was there. The Gathering, Cradle of Filth was 2000 or was that 99? I don't remember.
I went like two or three years in a row to Milwaukee Metal Fest.
If you look at the lineups for those 3 years that we played, it's like it's unbelievable. So,
I got to go to the special. I used to have it on cassette because I recorded it. Anathema and Macaw both did an acoustic only set for the press. And I got to go into the room while they were doing nothing but like Beatles covers and shit. It was amazing.
Wow, that's incredible.
And then we got to go to a Gorgoroth press conference. The first time they've ever done anything without like their full fucking face makeup.
Mm-hmm.
It was crazy. Then we're hanging out. I was talking about my friend from Blood Throne. They used to wear full, you know, face makeup. We all decided, like, one of the nights after in Milwaukee, we decided to go to a Denny's somewhere. And it was like, it was the most ridiculous trying to get served at a Denny's.
Oh, ever. Hell yeah.
Full fucking black metal makeup and shit. And they're like, yes, ma'am. Can I have the, they're like, mm-hmm, they were freaking out, but they're,
the memories, you know, they're, yeah, man. Some of those memories that you're just talking about, going to the diner across from the Ambassador Hotel in Milwaukee, where Jeffrey Dahmer slaughtered one of his victims in the room.
I stayed at that hotel.
Yeah, me too. We stayed there the first year and the third year. We stayed in the Ambassador. We found the bricked off Dahmer room and shit. It's crazy shit.
Bro. What are you doing, bro?
In the hotel that the fucking guy killed the guy in.
No, that's right.
Why the fuck?
I'd have done the same thing, Rick.
I remember one night I wound up some Earache Records party in a hotel room somewhere in that hotel. Mm-hmm. And there's this dude that was really fucking drunk, started talking to me. And he was the drummer for a band called Shadows Fall. My band's gonna be super huge. I'm gonna be one of the biggest drummers ever. Yeah. I'm like, all right, dude. All right, cool. I know your band. Yeah, I got your promo. You're good.
Jesus Christ.
Now he's like he's a drummer of Overkill.
Oh, he's in Overkill now.
Yeah.
Huh? Wow. Like, Overkill goes to a lot of dudes, man. Jesus.
Yeah.
God. Fuck. They should get Bobby Gustafson back. Go. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, that'd be awesome.
I mean, they're only on like album like 24, 25, that's something.
Pretty
like
awesome.
That. Those guys. I mean, those guys crank out material like.
Dave, we went and saw him like what it was like maybe 3 or 4 years ago together.
Yeah, something like that.
It was,
that was actually honestly that was the that was what won them over to me, I guess, if you want to put it that way. Yeah. Like I knew who they were. I'd heard them a bunch or whatever, but it just never really like clicked for me. But seeing them live, they crushed it. And I was like, okay, yeah, I get this now. I get this now. So
I think that was a tour they did with like Symphony X or something. Mm.
I don't remember Symphony X being there, but maybe they were. I can't recall. I know I've seen Symphony X a couple other times, so I may have just forgot.
I got to see Overkill at L'Amour, and you know, when you see, you know, this, I only saw them there once. I've only seen Overkill maybe that one time. Another time. Yeah, it was the WFO tour, so it was like 94.
Yeah, 94. And underrated album, actually.
94. Yeah, it was a great album. 94, man. I could go down the list of shows I saw at L'Amour. And it would fucking blow your mind, man.
That's amazing.
Amazing, the best metal club ever. And you know, you see
that's crazy. In Brooklyn, right?
Yeah, that was in they consider it Bay Ridge, but I think it's Bensonhurst. It's like on the border over there somewhere. But
yeah. Legendary to me. I've never been to Brooklyn. So
well, in the 80s, L'Amour opened. You know, it was a disco in the late 70s, and then in the early 80s they transitioned to rock and then metal. 82, 83. I went to school. Elementary school with the owner's son. So wow. in 1983, we used to have sleepovers. I used to go to the kid's house, Mike Parenti. That was his club. And he said, my dad owns L'Amour. And he used to pull Jesus. Out, you know, bumper stickers and all this shit. And they managed White Lion. The managers of L'Amour, the owners of L'Amour,
White Lion.
They managed White Lion. So I remember one night I was sleeping over at his house.
Vito Brada.
Was sitting at the table, like they're in a meeting there. With
incredible.
I don't think it was Mike Tramp. I don't remember a him being there, but I was a young kid, you know. I remember a guy with a big nose sitting there with long hair, and I look back. That's Vito Brada. That was
Vito,
who is you know, up there with Eddie Van Halen, in my opinion, as far as
without soul. A doubt, without yeah. a doubt.
That guy's sweet shit, man. Listen to that shit. That's that old yeah. White Line. I mean, this is not the heaviest shit. You know what I'm saying? I'm kind of, you know,
he's up dude. There with Randy Rhoads, man.
He's just, the guy was the man, dude. He's
yeah. So guys, Vito Brada.
Yeah. So what's the very first show you guys ever saw?
The first concert I went to, sorry, Tom, it was, you know, I had gone to my father. He used to take me when I was a kid to big concerts. Like he was Frank Sinatra, Stevie Wonder, big names, legendary names. So I would go to those concerts. But the first rock show that I went to was unfortunate. It was actually, you know, it was Skid Row and Aerosmith at Nassau Coliseum in January of 1990. So
you could have done worse. I mean,
but yeah, it's not that bad.
two bands of my hated, most hated bands list in the world.
You could have saw Aerosmith. you could have been like me and saw Skid Row with Bon Jovi.
Well, who was singing for Skid Row at the time?
It was Bach. Oh, okay. This is like 89, 90.
Oh shit. Okay, they were good. I liked those first two albums, man. Slaves to the Grind and shit. That's good.
Me and my buddy were huge Skid Row fans, and we actually convinced my parents to take us to the show. We skipped out during Bon Jovi. This was like at the Summit, where one of the big places here, which is now the fucking what's his name?
It's the giant mega church that
the mega church, yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck his name. Who cares?
Joel Osteen.
So this is where all the big shows used to be. That's where like saw first the Clash of the Titans show. First time I ever saw Iron Maiden was there. Was Anthrax. The Operation Rock and Roll show was there. The tour. We snuck out. We're like, you know what? I don't like Bon Jovi. We don't like this band. We took off and we like went to like the Hilton next door. And some old dude offered us like beer. We're like, yeah, we should probably get out of here. We were like fucking like 12, 13, you know.
It's laced with some shit that's gonna get you fucking drunk and naked on the bed for that old motherfucker. You know what I'm saying? That's what I thought. Don't drink that beer, man. So real quick to not interrupt Tom, but the second show I went to, the first like metal show after I got my driver's license, so I was able to go to shows, was fucking Anacrusis, Flotsam and Jetsam,
wow,
Cathedral,
whoa,
and Merciful Fate. And to this day, that's my favorite show that I've ever done.
Wow, dude.
And I drove there. I was in Newark, New Jersey at Studio One. And that club is now, you know, long gone. But I can't find video of that anywhere on YouTube. But that was my first, like, and I was right up front for all that. So Anacrusis during the Screams and Whispers tour. This is right before they broke up. Amazing shit, man.
Yeah.
Cathedral was
underrated band.
Great band, man. Ken Nardi, man. That dude was the shit. So that was my, you know, first, you know, I started going to shows about 16 on my own.
What year was that?
92, 93. 92. That was September of 93. And from then on, it was like every weekend I was going driving to some sick fucking show.
I'm probably a couple years, maybe older than you, maybe 2 or 3 years older than you.
Yeah, I remember that Clash of the Titans. I wanted to go badly.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't get to go to that. That was Alice in Chains opened that one, right?
No. Yeah, Clash of the Titans was Alice in Chains, and then Megadeth, Slayer, Anthrax.
And Alice in Chains getting booed off stage every night from what I used to read.
I don't remember that, but I mean, I liked them back in the day. Actually, my I was like, oh, this band is going to be opening up for the show. So I took, my mom took me to the mall. We bought the cassette, the CD. No, it was a CD that came with the VHS of them, the live Facelift album. I still have that tape too, man.
Cool.
Nice.
I really got into them. What about, yeah, so awesome, Tom, what about you, dude?
Well, as far as big concerts go, it would be Metallica at Nassau Coliseum.
Okay. We got to go now.
97.
Yeah.
I'm a few years younger than Rick.
A lot younger than me. He's a young man.
Yeah, I'm a young supple boy.
Young supple. A young, so we call it. Yeah.
Weird thing to say.
I'm gonna be turning 39 in a couple of months.
He wouldn't have turned down that beer.
I'm right there with you, man. So you and we're the same age, you and me.
Cool. Yeah, I'll be 39 in 3 months too.
Sweet. I'll be 39.
There you go. So as far as like underground music, I used to do sleepovers. Rick was talking about sleepovers with my buddy in Huntington Station, my buddy Ricky Blowers. And I would go there. This is like seventh grade, so I guess I'm about 12 or something like that, 11, 12. And I would get dropped off, and I'd sleep over, and me and him would sneak out once we knew his parents were asleep. It'd be about 12:30. Like we would – it was cool, man. Like his parents would take us to Blockbuster or the local video store. We get a video. We come back. Like they give us like candy or popcorn and shit. We go into the basement, and he had this basement where it was kind of like big open basement. And then there was a separate room down, and his older sister lived in like the other room, but it was this big open basement and it had a pullout couch.
What's a basement?
I wish I had one.
And long story short, we snuck out and we heard music, and there was nice. Bands playing at the local VFW, and it was Boy Sets Fire, Indecision, Tension was really the band that blew my mind and kind of got me into weirder, heavier, faster music. Great band. Check out Tension if you haven't heard of them.
I've never heard of them.
And At the Hour of Our Death is kind of like it's a recording, so it's like a full length, but then it's also like a 7-inch that's attached to it at the end. It's an amazing release. It was released by None of the Above Records. Shout out to None of the Above. Great underground store in Center Reach, Long Island. It was very key growing up. A lot of flyers there, and just a lot of great shit you're not going to find anywhere else for pretty much. And Tension, great band.
Right on.
They're really fast and kind of power violence-y, but not really. They have the Long Island groove. They're unique. The recording is really really like it's really unique and buzzsaw-y kind of sounding. It's good, man. It's good shit. And they were just always good live. They were really intense live, violent, heavy. It was good shit.
Let's go to our guys. What about you, Justin? What was the very first concert you ever saw? You say Metallica?
No, it was not Metallica.
I did see them back in the day, so I can't deny that.
Yeah, me too.
Well,
when they were good.
With my church group or whatever, when I was really young, I saw DC Talk and Gibraltar. I think that was my first concert. Okay, but the first concert I actually went to was a Nine Inch Nails concert.
Ah.
It was when Downward Spiral was out. So I'm not ashamed of that one.
I wouldn't be ashamed of that.
Early teens, probably. You were probably a young kid, right?
Yeah, I was 8th grade, 9th grade, yeah, something 13, like that.
12, yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. What about you, Dave? What was your very first show?
I couldn't even tell you at this point. It would be weird to try to think about like how am I defining that. I think like Justin, I came up in the church. My dad was a preacher, and if the church was open, I was there. That was just how it was going to be. And so there was a lot of like Christian rock that when I could get away with it, Christian rock concerts. But then there was like, shit. I know I saw, it wouldn't have been my first, but I know I saw Van Halen at some point, but it was like Van Halen with Gary Cherone.
Oh, shit. That's like, I mean, a band was around 40 years, and you saw them at the one point where Gary Cherone. That's like when I saw Life of Agony one time with
Phil Crane.
Phil Crane
singing. Dude, yeah. I saw that show. It was with I can't remember the band that I toured with, but my cousin was with me, man. We drove all the way to San Antonio to see him. I'm a big Life of Agony fan.
Yeah, hell yeah, man. Fuck yeah, those early albums.
Yes, yeah. Dude. Even today. Oh, the last one, not so much, but whatever. We went and we drove to go see them in San Antonio. They were opening up for Anthrax. That's who it was.
Right,
and,
right. I
remember and my cousin was drunk, and we were hanging out in this back area of the club outside, and he mentioned to him, he said something along the lines with, yeah, you were way, way better in Ugly Kid Joe. You just sucked tonight. Dude almost like pumps him out. I was like, I don't know this guy.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you what, man. Life of Agony is going back to L'Amour we're talking about. I used to watch them, you know, before River Runs Red came out.
Damn.
At L'Amour with Type O all the time. Life of Agony, Type O. God. And Mina Caputo,
yeah,
at the time playing keyboards for like the song Plexiglass Gate. If you ever
heard that song. From the demo.
I saw that live. Yeah, man. I used to watch them play. They had keyboards live, and those were violent pits, man. You want to talk about violent pits? Life of Agony in 1992, 1993 pits. You know, young man, I can handle myself back in the day. You know what I'm saying?
When River Runs Red came out, that was a life changer for me.
Yeah, it's great. It's still classic, man. I love that album. I remember. And then
I love Ugly. Ugly is one of my favorite albums of all time.
Great album too.
It came out right
for me.
Yeah, Ugly came out the same time. It was like 95.
Yeah.
So it was like right around the time that my mom passed away. So some of the shit on that album was like super meaningful to me. Yeah, like
see that. I can see how
Lost to 22 that came out. I'm like, dude, that's me right there. But yeah, me and my wife are both big fans of them.
Yeah, dude.
They have a documentary coming out next.
I can't wait to see it. I can't wait to watch it. Man.
Me too, so man.
They played. You know, I must have seen Life of Agony a dozen times, more. You know, it was all the time.
Life of Agony,
Type O, I must have seen 15 times back. Man. You know, back in the day, Biohazard a whole bunch of times. You know, that was also in New York.
I saw them open up for I think Slayer and Machine Head one time.
If you look back at some of these, there's a L'Amour fan page that I'm a part of. If you go look at that, occasionally people will post old flyers and shit in these shows.
I know Anthrax played there a lot, didn't they?
Anthrax. There's one show in particular that you know pops up once in a while. It was Soundgarden, Voivod.
Fuck.
And oh god, who was the third fucking band there? It was another crazy, huge, amazing. You know, it was like ridiculous. You know, it's just a random show. But yeah, that's. I could talk about L'Amour all night, man. The shows that went on there. Metallica in early 85. They played there three nights.
So yeah. Great stuff here in Houston, in the Texas area growing up, late 80s, early 90s. I saw Dead Horse, if you know that band. Mm-hmm. Every time they fucking played, I was there. And I saw Pantera before Cowboys from Hell came out.
Oh, killer, man.
So, yeah. That's great. If you've heard the old like power metal, then even before that shit.
Oh yeah,
man.
I mean, yeah, I got a dub of power metal like around the time Cowboys came out. Somebody sent me that, and I liked power metal because it was like Anselmo was doing like Halford kind of shit on that
very album. Very power metal-y. And when they first toured for Cowboys from Hell, my dad drove me to this head shop. They were doing an in store signing, and I got all the original cassettes like. Projects in the Jungle, I Am the Night, all that shit signed by the entire band.
Damn, those are worth a lot of money, man.
And I still have them, dude. One of them, I don't even remember, but Dimebag, he was like, you know what? I didn't go buy Dimebag at this time.
Yeah, Diamond,
he actually signed it Diamond.
Hell yeah, cool. Man. Yeah. He was even up to Vulgar Display, he was Diamond Darrell. You know, in the copy I had, he was Diamond Darrell.
Yeah, Vulgar. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Vulgar Display. It was. But yeah, I saw them in 93. I saw them at the Roseland in New York City with Sacred Reich. On the Vulgar Display tour, that was a good show too. Scott Ian came on stage and they did Cold Gin. They did the Kiss song Cold Gin. Nice. It was a killer show, man. And then I saw them again with Morbid Angel and who was else? Morbid Angel, Pantera, and Slayer at Nassau Coliseum. Wow. I was up front for that. That was.
I remember that tour. They did bring Morbid Angel out. That was like the 80s, awesome. Wasn't it?
That was the year 2001. That was okay. Summer of 2001, I believe.
Yeah,
I believe that was. And seeing Morbid Angel in an arena, that was pretty cool. I always like seeing death metal in big in like we saw Tom and I went to go see Opeth at Radio City Music Hall. Wow. Which was that going to that venue, which is my favorite, one of my favorite spots to see a concert.
Do they have good audio there? Or?
Oh, Jesus. Oh, man, dude. Yeah, that was awesome. Go, look at Radio City online. Just, wiki in. And just look at the interior. It's amazing, dude. And to see Opeth playing they were playing some brutal death metal there. And also at the Apollo Theater, we saw them. In Harlem, so in these legendary venues.
Unfortunately, in Houston, one of our biggest concert venues is called Warehouse Live, and the acoustics in there
they're horrible. Last time that was the last place I saw Opeth was in that place.
Yeah, me too.
They sounded okay because like they keep their own like sound people on the road with them, and they're able to like they can work that shit out.
Yeah,
but like before them played the Sword. Who are from Austin. They're just kind of down the road. And I like the Sword. They were fucking loud. And you couldn't, and the sound was abysmal. It was just because it's all just like flat walls and exposed girders up top. And it was just cacophonous.
That sounds like an atrocity. It sounds like an atrocity.
You always have to wonder, do I want to go see this band at this venue? Because it sounds so horrible. Like we saw Blind Guardian there and they sounded great because they sounded great.
Yeah.
If you're stuck with the venue sound,
those pros that like they have guys that they can carry around with them and like they.
Isn't that where we saw Legion, Kerry, last time?
No, we saw Legion at House of Blues.
Okay, yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, in New York, we have some great venues to watch shows at, and it's good that like they put metal at a lot of these big venues, these legendary venues now. So it's cool to be able to experience that. There's a newer place in Brooklyn. I hope it's still around. It's called Warsaw, right? Tom, is that what it is? The Warsaw?
And Warsaw is the place. I get that confused with the place that Buckshot played with Squash Battles.
No, this is a huge place. Squash Battles, that band. This is a huge, huge, big room. And
I saw Hot Water Music there. I saw Converge and Neurosis there. Mm-hmm.
And it was the best sounding venue I ever heard in my life. I saw Voivod there last year, or no, 2019, when I unfortunately had my ruptured discs in my spine. So I was in excruciating pain. So I remember that, and I remember the amazing acoustics of this place. And I recommend everyone going to that venue. I hope it's still around. But it was in Brooklyn,
cool, guys.
Yep.
Well, I want to be the first to say thank you guys for hanging out with us tonight. It's been a lot of fucking fun.
We had a great time. Yeah.
Are there any topics you wanted to cover before we all head off to bed because we're old?
Yeah, let's see. I don't know. I think we covered many, many things here.
Yeah, thanks for checking us, checking everything out. Thanks for, hanging out with us. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you for all that. And please do check out all four of our projects and look for
them. I'm gonna bring it back up on screen. So if you're watching this, but if you're listening to it later on the podcast, so Twitter and Instagram at GraySkiesFallen, at Reeking Aura, Instagram Buckshot Facelift, and Brave the Waters. So check out all the bands. And like we said before, we're going to put show notes together. So we'll have links to all your Bandcamp stuff too. So people can check it out.
Yeah, the Bandcamp is the important page for all the bands these days. That's where you sell your albums and stuff, especially if you're like most of our bands are we're putting the stuff out ourselves. So it's good to.
And Bandcamp is doing this really cool thing on the first Friday of every month where 100% of the proceeds goes right back to the band.
Which is super cool. And people seem to latch onto that. They like to support bands, and we do okay those days. And this tape here, this Reeking Aura, Beneath the Canopy of Compost, that's very limited. It's on Parasitic Records, and there's a few left. So if, go to the Bandcamp for Reeking Aura and the new shit for that band is going to be really, really off the chain. So that's going to come soon. We're going to figure out what to do with that. And then after Reeking Roar, we'll turn it to Gray Skies Fallen, and then we'll put out some new fucking doom metal for that
shit. I need to make an order from you guys. I need the actual physical version of the Gray Skies Fallen. It better come autographed, though. I want an autograph.
We could do whatever you need, man. We got 35 X members all over the place. I could summon one guy from here, another guy from here, sign all this stuff. But yeah.
All right, Rick. What about you? Let's pull up your socials right here.
Yeah, Tumescent Man. You know, that's my Xbox Live name too. So people look at me like I'm a fucking maniac. When I was playing Rocket League at my parents' house one day, just hanging out there, and I scored a goal, and it said Tumescent Man scores in giant letters. And my father was like, "Who the fuck is Tumescent Man?" And I had to explain it.
Tumescent Man. Jesus Christ, bro.
And then my niece is like, "What does Tumescent mean?" And I was like, "Oh."
God. I never noticed that one either. That's a new one to me too.
You know, that's my Xbox Live name too. You got to add me on there. We'll play. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, so, I'll add you on there, man.
Cool, man. Definitely do that. And Instagram, I just post a lot of records. I'll get in the mail or whatever. I'll post it. Oh, I got this album today. Yeah, it's cool, you know. And that's about it. And have some fun on it. I don't take social media too seriously. Otherwise, you know, it'll fucking blow your brains out. You'll butt the wire. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I purposely I'm not going to share any social media because I like to kind of stay off of it, to be honest.
Especially if you do it for a job.
Yeah. I have a Facebook. You could you know, find me on there. How you doing?
How you doing? It's a very secret.
You know what I'm saying? You know, if you really want to, you could find me on there. And you know, thank you for the support. If you want to go to any of the band camps and, you know, check out the music, man. That's the most important thing. That's what we love. That's what we appreciate. And we appreciate you guys, man. Thank you guys so much for having us,
dude. Yeah, we appreciate you guys. And back to like we said before, the new album is going to be re-released on grimdistribution.bandcamp.com.
And like check 1 hour, there too. Like 54 minutes, I think the record is re-released officially. Nice. So that's pretty cool. Nice. And hopefully people will enjoy it and pick it up. The second press and also Paragon Records also helping out with that re-release.
Yeah, shout to Mike Zancelli. Thank you so much, Mike.
The Zancel dog. Yeah, that's a good label to check out too. He put out the Gray Skies Fallen, the Many Sides of Truth album for us on CD. And he also put out the last Buckshot Facelift album. And a lot of good stuff on that label too.
Yeah, great guy Records. Too, man. Great guy.
Yeah, all right. So let's go to Mr. Brutal Dave here.
Yeah, you can, all of my social media accounts are under, Red Viking Dave, mostly going to be artwork stuff, occasionally what I'm listening to or whatever other bullshit I'm up to. And for the next 7 weekends, you can find, if you're in Texas near the Austin area, or if that's within driving distance of you, head out to Sherwood Forest Fair. I'll be selling my artwork there, Saturdays and Sundays for the next 7 weeks.
And I've actually been thinking about driving up there one weekend.
Cool, man. Yeah. If anybody's kind of worried about how are they handling, like keeping everybody safe and everything, they're taking it very seriously, and they're doing a really good job of enforcing and like making sure people are being compliant and stuff. So, it's the first live event I've done since Sherwood last year. And, I was a little bit worried about it, and it helps that I'm vaccinated, but even beyond that, like, it's like, I didn't have a problem out there this weekend. I felt fine. And again, you know, being vaccinated plays a lot into that, but I saw a lot of people doing right and acting right and, you know, being respectful and stuff, and everybody's excited to be out and having a good time. So
cool, man.
Are you working on any art projects right now? Or are you just
I am kind of in between art projects, 'cause I've been in production mode getting ready, like, you know, making merchandise to sell and stuff like that. So I'm hoping to get into making some new images in the next couple of weeks once I get caught back up. This first weekend blew us away. It was the best weekend we've ever had at one of these. That's amazing, so, man. I got a lot of catching up to do. So
fuck yeah.
All right. Let's go. Justin, the metal detector.
You can find me on all the social medias as at ComicalJC. And if you'd like, check out my other podcast. It's available at mindfudgecomedy.com or on any podcast platform.
There you go. Cool. And then finally, Check out our show on all the socials at Metal Geeks. We're email if you have a request or a topic, or you have a George Hates Metal segment you want to talk about, msrcast@gmail.com, website at metalgeeks.net. Of course, if you want you to subscribe, we're on all the social media platforms, or all the platforms where you can download your podcast. So Spotify and Apple Music and Stitcher and all those places. Join us on Facebook at the Metal Geek Society. Join the group there. We're having a lot of fun. Of course, you can find us on esonetwork.com. We're part of that network where all those great shows are. And I think that's it. No more housekeeping on my end, I don't think. Again, I have to thank Rick, and I have to thank Tom for hanging out with us tonight. We have one last thing we always have to fucking say.
Keep it metal.
Balls.
Fuck yeah. Hell yeah.
And guys, keep it geeky. And Justin, I'll give it to you now.
Balls.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, man.
Later, guys.
Later, guys.
See ya.
Thanks to listening to another fine podcast brought to you by MSR Productions. All rights reserved, blah, 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 blah. For reviews, archives of our podcasts, and all your other metal geekery needs, please visit metalgeeks.net.
We're the Con Guys, as in Comic-Con, and this is the Con Guys Show, coming at you straight from the heart of Hollywood, California, with the news, celebrity interviews, and fun-loving opinions to help fuel your passions. We are your ultimate insiders, filmmakers, writers, actors, costumers, gamers, panelists, but most of all, we are fans. And whether it's sci-fi, collectibles, comic books, gaming, animation, cosplay, or fan conventions, if you love it, we cover it. Your behind-the-scenes look at all things con.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.